Going to be reading from Matthew 16, 21 through 28. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." Poor Peter. He often said the right thing, like if you'll recall in the scene previous to this where Jesus asks, "Who do they say I am?" And Peter knew exactly who he was, Son of Man, the Messiah, and he got commended for knowing that. But now, Peter has a tendency sometimes to put his foot in his mouth. And I think that's exactly what he did when he got Jesus aside and said, "God forbid, Lord, that is not going to happen." And Jesus, in a way, kind of scolded him, but I'm not sure that Jesus was really scolding him so much as Jesus was just kind of pointing out that it is a good possibility that Satan kind of put that thought in Peter's mind to try and keep things from happening. Because Satan knew at that time that if Jesus suffered and was crucified and rose again, that Satan was cooked. He knew he was in trouble. So he was doing whatever he could to try and keep that from happening. And I think Jesus was in a way telling Peter that, no, Satan probably put that in your mind, and you're thinking about things here on earth. You're not thinking about things of heaven, spiritual things, divine things. And I think it's important to understand that there are a lot of times that we have a tendency to be like Peter and say things that we probably should have kept our mouth shut, and we wished we hadn't, and we stick our foot firmly in our mouth. The sad thing is that once it's out there, you think, oh no, you cannot grab it and pull it back. It's already done. And we have to be careful about those things, because we often do that kind of thing where we, you know, we suffer a setback or a defeat, or we just mess up and think, gosh, I wish I hadn't have done that. And it happens. Playwright Oscar Wilde once commented after a disastrous opening night that his play was a great success, but the audience was the failure. I guess that's one way of putting it. Winston Churchill had that same ability to kind of put a spin on things. He was a great politician. He was asked one time what most prepared him to lead England through World War II. And his reply was, "It was that time I repeated second grade." And the questioner said, "Well, you mean you flunked a grade?" He said, "No, I was given a second opportunity to get it right." And that's a great way to look at it, I suppose, given a second opportunity to get it right. And sometimes we do get second chances. Sometimes the things we say or do, people are not real keen on, and you don't get that second chance. But I think Peter did get second chances. I think Jesus thought the world of him, knew his mind was in the right place, his heart was in the right place. He just, like many of us, slipped up and said the wrong thing at the wrong time. And Jesus kind of tried to explain that to him. And it's important that we realize that we have to kind of be Peter's good side in a way. we have to say the right things and be careful not to say the wrong things. And that is important in Christianity. It's important for the church, for Christ, that we get out there and we do say the right things. And we're careful not to say the wrong things. Because, unfortunately, people watch us. As Christians, if they know you're a church person, they know you're a Christian, they're always watching to wait and see if you're going to mess up. So they can say, ha, some Christian you are. And they like to catch you at that. I remember years ago when I was at the police department, I was a little bit late for work one morning, and I had it was an old patrol unit. They'd taken the lights and all that stuff off of it. I got to take it home and drive it to work. And I was a little late, and I needed to get over in this other lane. And so rather than slow down and get behind them, I punched it and got in front of them so I'd be out to work on time. Well, somebody called in and complained. And the chief told me, he says, Nielsen, he says, you got to remember, they're always watching. And that's true. They're always watching. They're always waiting for us to mess up as Christians. And in a lot of cases, you'll notice sometimes I'll say in the benediction, that is the only church they're ever going to see. And it is for a lot of people. That is the only church they're ever going to see, is how we act as Christians. How we act when we walk out that door. And that's important. And we have to be careful about that, that we don't stick our foot in our mouth, that we don't do something we know we shouldn't have done, and somebody sees us do it. We should be careful enough to think about what we're going to say, or think about who's watching, and do the right thing. And I think, especially today in our society where churches seem to be dwindling, because society's got better things to do, and I think we need to be more aggressive. We need to be more out there doing what Christ commanded his disciples to do. Spread the gospel and make new disciples. And that's important. And we do that by saying the right thing at the right time to the people that need it most. So we have to watch what we say. I know in James it tells us that the tongue is the most difficult part of our bodies to tame. And it is. We sometimes, without thinking, say some of the awfulest things. I know at home sometimes I'll say something that I probably shouldn't have said, and Marilyn or my daughter will look at me and they'll go, "Preacher, now?" So we have to be careful in our homes, in our workplaces, the people that we see. There's a story about Barbara Bush back when her husband was the vice president. They had gone to Tokyo and they were having a state dinner with Emperor Hirohito. And she was sitting next to him, and she was trying desperately to start a conversation with him. And she wasn't having much luck. She was getting yes and no and an occasional thank you. So she was trying hard to get this conversation going. So she finally, looking at the palace or whatever it is that the emperor lives in, where they're having this dinner, and she said, "This is really a nice place. This is really elegant. Is it new?" And she got a yes answer again. She thought, well, that didn't work. "Was the old palace just so old it was falling down?" And in a kind and charming way, Emperor Hirohito looked at her and said, "No, I'm afraid that you bombed it." Oops. Probably not a good question for her to ask. And that's how it is with us sometimes. We're trying so hard to talk to somebody, to get a conversation going, to say the right things, that oops, the wrong thing comes out of our mouth. We have to watch out for that. And sometimes we just say things because we don't think about it. For example, there's a tour group of students in Italy. They were touring St. Peter's Basilica, second largest church in the world. And the tour guide was telling them about how big this church was and how you could not hit a ball, baseball, from one end of the church to the other. Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, Mark McGuire could not hit a baseball from one end of that church to the other. And some young student said, "You mean they actually let them hit baseballs here?" Not thinking. And we do that. Sometimes we don't think, we just say, and say some pretty crazy things. And that's what Peter got into. He didn't think first. He just blurted it out, and he kind of got smacked down for it. And we do that. Sometimes we blurt things out and shouldn't have. Soren Kierkegaard tells a parable about a town. Their citizens loved and admired the fire chief and his crew, thought they did a great job. Well, one night the alarm went off, and the fire chief grabbed his crew, and they got on the fire truck, and they started towards this fire, and they got almost to it, and there's this crowd of people, and they couldn't get to the fire. So the fire chief gets out, and he says, "What are you people doing?" And he noticed that they all had little squirt guns in their hands, and occasionally they'd turn around, and they'd squirt them at the fire. And he's like, "What are you people thinking? Well, we admire you so much, we wanted to help you out." He's like, "Get out of here. I know you're well-meaning and you're trying to do the right thing, but this is not going to help." And we are well-meaning sometimes and do things that aren't going to help. And rather than fire hoses, we approach things with squirt guns. And especially when it comes to things dealing with Christ and Christianity and making disciples. And you hear people talk about things like growing the church. We need to get more people in church. No, we need to make more disciples for Christ. It's about discipleship. It's not about the number of people in the pews. It's about discipleship. And that's what we should be out there talking to people about, becoming a disciple of Christ. And we hope that because they become a disciple of Christ, they join us in fellowship in our church. That's what it's really all about. And that's what Christ commanded his disciples to do. We are to be soldiers for him. We are to get out there and we are to bring people to Christ. Not to church. Bring people to Christ. And that's important. And I think in our society today, we've kind of forgotten about that. We don't talk to people about Christ like we used to, like we should. We tend to be more like poor Peter on the night when Jesus was crucified and he denied him three times. "I don't know him. I don't know what you're talking about." We have a tendency to do that in our society today. We don't want to offend anybody, so we don't talk about it. Well, I don't care if it offends them or not. If I want to pray in a restaurant, if I want to say something to somebody about Christ, I'm going to do it. And if they don't like it, tough. Because that is my duty as a Christian, not as a minister, because technically we are all ministers. It is our duty as Christians to speak to others about Christ, whether they like it or not. We are to follow Jesus, and as he says, take up our cross to follow him. In August of 2003, the Holy Cross Church in New York City was burglarized. first time they were burglarized, the thieves took a metal money box. Kind of makes sense. A few weeks later, they were burglarized again, and these thieves unbolted Jesus, 4-foot-long, 200-pound Jesus, unbolted it from the cross and stole the Jesus. Left the cross, but they stole the Jesus. And everybody was kind of puzzled about that. Why wouldn't you take the whole crucifix? Why go to all the trouble of taking the Jesus off the cross and steal just it? And one of the priests said, well, you know, that's kind of like society today. They want Jesus, but they don't want to have to bear the cross. And it's true. We want Jesus. We want all the love and the forgiveness, but we don't want to have to deal with what is involved with loving Jesus. We talked about that a little bit in Sunday school this morning. People, they look at the forgiveness of Jesus, but they forget about the fact that Jesus says, you are forgiven. Go and sin no more. They chop that last part off. You are forgiven. And that's all they want to hear. There's more to it than that. And people have to understand that. And it's not an easy thing, especially today, for people to understand and for people to buy into, if you will. Because they do want the forgiveness and the love, but they don't want to have to change the way they're living. And it can't be that way. You have to be willing to change the way you're living. And I think if we really got out there and talked to people and let them know about Christ, that we let them know we are Christian and we are going to live a Christian life, and even if that means praying in restaurants or praying wherever you want to pray, that should be okay. Let them know that you don't care what they think, you're going to do it because you love Christ. That is Christ's great commission to us, is to live Christian lives, to show others we are living Christian lives, that we are doing the right thing. And every once in a while, we're going to make an oops. John Wesley talked about that. I may have mentioned that here a couple of weeks ago in a sermon. John Wesley said, we do make mistakes. But God understands that we make mistakes. And as long as we learn from those mistakes, it's okay. It helps us to grow spiritually. It helps us to grow as people. We mature by learning from our mistakes. If you don't learn from those mistakes, it's not doing any good. We try to live good Christian lives, and if we goof up, learn from it, understand it, and get on with your life. But help others to understand that as well. That Christianity doesn't mean we're perfect people. Y'all have seen the bumper sticker. I'm not perfect, I am forgiven. We are not perfect people. If we were perfect people, we wouldn't be sitting here. We'd be with Christ in heaven. We have to remember that. Alan Emery, author of a book called A Turtle on a Fence Post, tells a story from his childhood. He was taking a train trip with his parents, and on this trip he noticed that the porter that was moving the luggage was limping really bad, and he kind of wondered why. And so he asked the porter, what's going on there? You don't look like you feel well. And he says, well, I have an infected toe, but I have to work. I can't do anything about it. Well, the next morning, he saw this porter coming out of the stateroom or whatever they call it on a train where his parents were. and tears were rolling down his face. He was obviously crying. So the young man sat down with him and asked him, "What did my dad do to you in there? Why are you crying?" He says, "I'm not crying because your dad did anything to hurt me." He says, "Your dad noticed that I was limping too. And he told him, 'I'm not a doctor, but I think I can help you.'" So he got the porter to come in and sit down and took his shoes and stuff off. And he said, "I'm going to lance your infection and I'm going to clean it and we're going to wrap it." And he told the young man, he says, "And my foot feels great." And the boy's like, "Why are you crying?" He says, "Well, while he was wrapping my foot and making it feel better, he started talking to me about Christ, about his love and his mercy and how he cares about us." And the porter was moved by that. He was moved that the man had taken the time not only to make him feel better, but had taken the time to tell him about Christ. And it moved him. And we don't know but what in any given situation, if we're helping somebody or just talking to somebody, and we happen to start talking to them about Christ, maybe that's God's plan for you at that very time. And maybe you're going to make that person feel better about themselves, be moved, become a Christian themselves. Because that's what our Christianity is all about. That's what our lives are about. That is our commission from Christ. Go and spread the gospel and make disciples of everyone. And I know we're not going to get everyone. God knows we're not going to get everyone. But he does expect us to try and help those around us and help others to know who he is and come to him and understand his love. That means speaking up. That means not being afraid to offend somebody. That means saying the right things and doing the right things, because people are watching. They're waiting for us to make a mistake. And we might make a mistake, but they need to understand that that's part of life too. But we love Christ. Christ loves us. He forgives us and hopes that we learn from our mistakes, that we mature in our Christianity, because we are forgiven. Repentance means don't do it again. So like Peter, we can say all the right things, or we can blurt something out and make a big mistake. As long as we understand it, that's okay. And hopefully we get a second chance to set the record straight. Amen.